thrumming opaque magic wall, but the crowd still converged. Hunt glanced to where Bryce walked beside him, silent, glassy-eyed. Barefoot, he realized. How long had she been barefoot? She must have lost her shoes in the explosion. He debated offering to carry her again, or suggesting that he fly them to her apartment. But she held her arms so tightly around herself that he had a feeling one word would send her into a rage spiral with no bottom. The look she gave Rune before walking out. It made Hunt glad she wasn't an acid-spitting viper. The male's face would have melted. Gods help them when the prince arrived at the gallery tomorrow. Bryce's doorman leapt out of his seat as they walked into the pristine lobby, asking if she was all right, if she'd been in the club. She mumbled that she was fine, and the ursine shifter surveyed Hunt with a predator's focus. Noticing that look, she waved a hand at him, punching the elevator button, and introduced them.
Hunt, this is Marin. Marin, this is Hunt. He's staying with me for the foreseeable future, unfortunately.
Then she was padding into the elevator, where she had to lean against the chrome rail along the back, as if she were about to collapse. Hunt squeezed in as the doors were closing. The box was too small, too tight with his wings, and he kept them close as they shot up to the penthouse. Bryce's head sagged, her shoulders curving inward. Hunt blurted, "Why won't you make the drop?" The elevator doors opened, and she slumped against them before she entered the elegant cream and cobalt hallway. But she halted at her apartment door, then turned to him.
My keys were in my purse.
Her purse was now in the ruin of the club. Does the doorman have a spare? She grunted her confirmation, eyeing the elevator as if it were a mountain to climb. Marin busted Hunt's balls for a good minute, checking that Bryce was alive in the hallway, asking into the hall vidcom if she approved, to which he got a thumbs up. When Hunt returned, he found her sitting against her door, legs up and spread enough to show a pair of hot pink underwear. Thankfully, the hall cameras couldn't see at that angle, but he had no doubt the shifter monitored them, as Hunt helped her to her feet and handed her the spare keys. She slowly slid in the key, then put her palm to the bespelled finger pad beside the door.
I was waiting,
she murmured, as the locks clicked open and the dim apartment lights flickered on.
We were supposed to make the drop together. We picked 2 years from now.
He knew who she meant. The reason why she no longer drank, or danced, or really seemed to live her life. The reason why she must keep that scar on her pretty, sleek thigh. Ogenis and all her sacred mysteries knew that Hunt had punished himself for a damn long while, after the colossal failure that had been the Battle of Mount Hermon. Even while he'd been tortured in the Asteri's dungeons, he'd punished himself, flaying his own soul in a way no Imperial interrogator ever could. So maybe it was a stupid question, but he asked as they entered the apartment.
Why bother waiting now?
Hunt stepped inside and got a good look at the place Quinlan called home. The open concept apartment had looked nice from outside the windows, but inside? Either she or Danica had decorated it without sparing any expense. A white, deep cushioned couch lay in the right third of the great room, set before a reclaimed wood coffee table and the massive television atop a carved oak console. A fogged glass dining table with white leather chairs took up the left third of the space, and the center third of it went to the kitchen. White cabinets, chrome appliances, and white marble counters, all of it impeccably clean, soft, and welcoming. Hunt took it in, standing like a piece of baggage by the kitchen island, while Bryce padded down a pale oak hallway to release Syrinx from where he yowled from his crate. She was halfway down the hallway when she said without looking back,
without Danica. We were supposed to make the drop together, she said again. Connor and Thorne were going to anchor us.
The choice of anchor during the drop was pivotal and a deeply personal choice. But Hunt shoved aside the thoughts of the sour-faced government employee he'd been appointed, since he sure as fuck hadn't had any family or friends left to anchor him. Not when his mother had died only days before. Syrinx flung himself through the apartment, claws clicking on the light wood floors, yipping as he leapt upon Hunt, licking his hands. Each one of Bryce's returning steps dragged on her way to the kitchen counter. The silence pressed on him enough that he asked, "Were you and Danica lovers?" He'd been told 2 years ago that they weren't. But friends didn't mourn each other the way Bryce seemed to have so thoroughly shut down every part of herself, the way he had for Shahar. The patter of kibble hitting tin filled the apartment before Bryce plunked down the bowl, and Syrinx, abandoning Hunt, half threw himself inside it as he gobbled it down. Hunt turned in place as Bryce padded around the other end of the kitchen island, flinging open the enormous metal fridge to examine its meager contents. "No," she said, her voice flat and cold. "Danica and I weren't like that." Her grip on the fridge's handle tightened, her knuckles going white. "Connor and I. Connor Holstrom, I mean. He and I..." She trailed off. "It was complicated. When Danica died, when they all died, a light went out in me." He remembered the details about her and the elder of the Holstrom brothers. Ethan hadn't been there that night either, and was now second in Amelie Ravenscroft's pack. A sorry replacement for what the Pack of Devils had once been. The city had also lost something that night. Hunt opened his mouth to tell Quinlan he understood. Not just the complicated relationship thing, but the loss. To wake up one morning surrounded by friends and his lover, and then to end the day with all of them dead. He understood how it gnawed on bones and blood and the very soul of a person. How nothing could ever make it right. How cutting out the alcohol and the drugs, how refusing to do the things she loved most, the dancing, still couldn't make it right. But the words stalled in his throat. He hadn't felt like talking about it 200 years ago, and sure as hell didn't feel like talking about it now. A landline phone somewhere in the house began ringing, and a pleasant female voice trilled, "Call from home." Bryce closed her eyes, as if rallying herself, then padded down the darkened hallway that led to her bedroom. A moment later, she said with cheerfulness that should have earned her an award for best fucking actor in Midgard, "Hey, Mom." A mattress groaned. "No, I wasn't there. My phone fell in the toilet at work. Yep, totally dead. I'll get a new one tomorrow." "Yeah, I'm fine. June wasn't there either. We're all good." A pause. "I know. It was just a long day at work." Another pause. "Look, I've got company." A rough laugh. "Not that kind. Don't get your hopes up. I'm serious. Yes, I let him into my house willingly." "Please don't call the front desk." "His name? I'm not telling you." Just the slightest hesitation. "Mom, I will call you tomorrow." "I'm not telling him hello. Bye. Bye, Mom. Love you." Syrinx had finished his food and was staring expectantly at Hunt, silently pleading for more, that lion's tail waggling.
"No,"
he hissed at the beast, just as Bryce walked back into the main room. "Oh," she said, as if she'd forgotten he was there. "I'm going to take a shower. Guest room is yours. Use whatever you need."
"I'll swing by the Comitium tomorrow to get more clothes." Bryce just nodded like her head weighed 1,000 pounds. "Why'd you lie?"
He'd let her decide which one she wanted to explain. She paused, Syrinx trotting ahead down the hall to her bedroom. "My mom would only worry and come visit. I don't want her around if things are getting bad. And I didn't tell her who you were because that would lead to questions too. It's easier this way."
Easier to not let herself enjoy life. Easier to keep everyone at arm's length. The mark on her cheek from Juniper's slap had barely faded. Easier to throw herself on top of a friend as a bomb exploded, rather than risk losing them. she said quietly.
I need to find who did this, Hunt.
He met her raw, aching stare.
I know.
No, she said hoarsely. You don't. I don't care what Micah's motives are. If I don't find this fucking person, it is going to eat me alive.
Not the murderer or the demon, but the pain and grief that he was only starting to realize dwelled inside her.
I need to find who did this.
We will,
he promised.
How can you know that?
She shook her head.
Because we don't have another choice. I don't have another choice.
At her confused look, Hunt blew out a breath and said,
Micah offered me a deal.
Her eyes turned wary.
What sort of deal?
Hunt clenched his jaw. She'd offered up a piece of herself, so he could do the same, especially if they were now God's damned roommates.
When I first came here, Micah offered me a bargain. If I could make up for every life the 18th took that day on Mount Hermon, I'd get my freedom back. All 2,217 lives.
He steeled himself, willing her to hear what he couldn't quite say. She chewed on her lip.
I'm assuming that make up means...
Yes,
he ground out.
It means doing what I'm good at. A death for a death.
Micah has more than 2,000 people for you to assassinate? Hunt let out a harsh laugh.
Micah is a governor of an entire territory, and he will live for at least another 200 years. He'll probably have double that number of people on his shit list before he's done.
Horror crept into her eyes, and he scrambled for a way to get rid of it, unsure why.
It comes with the job. His job and mine.
He ran a hand through his hair.
Look, it's awful, but he offered me a way out, at least. And when the killings started again, he offered me a different bargain. Find the murderer before the summit meeting, and he'd reduce the debts I owed to 10.
He waited for her judgment, her disgust with him and Micah. But she angled her head.
That's why you've been a bullish pain in the ass.
Yes,
he said tightly.
Micah ordered me not to say anything, though, so if you breathe one word about it...
His offer will be rescinded.
Hunt nodded, scanning her battered face. She said nothing more. After a heartbeat, he demanded,
Well?
Well, what? She again began walking toward her bedroom.
Well, aren't you going to say that I'm a self-serving piece of shit?
She paused again, a faint ray of light entering her eyes.
Why bother, Athalar, when you just said it for me?
He couldn't help it then. Even though she was bloodied and covered in debris, he looked her over. Every inch and curve, tried not to think about the hot pink underwear beneath that tight green dress. But he said,
I'm sorry I thought you were a suspect. And more than that, I'm sorry I judged you. I thought you were just a party girl, and I acted like an asshole.
There's nothing wrong with being a party girl. I don't get why the world thinks there is.
But she considered his words.
It's easier for me when people assume the worst about what I am. It lets me see who they really are.
So you're saying you think I'm really an asshole?
A corner of his mouth curled up. But her eyes were dead serious.
I've met and dealt with a lot of assholes, Hunt. You're not one of them.
You weren't singing that tune earlier.
She just aimed for her room once more, so Hunt asked, Want me to get food? Again, she paused.
She looked like she was about to say no, but then rasped, Cheeseburger, with cheese fries, and a chocolate milkshake.
Hunt smiled.
You got it.
The elegant guest room on the other side of the kitchen was spacious, decorated in shades of gray and cream accented with pale rose and cornflower blue. The bed was big enough for Hunt's wings, thankfully, definitely bought with Vanir in mind. and a few photos in expensive-looking frames were propped next to a lopsided, chipped ceramic blue bowl, all adorning a chest of drawers to the right of the door. He'd gotten them both burgers and fries, and Bryce had torn into hers with a ferocity that Hunt had seen only among lions gathered around a fresh kill. He'd tossed the whining Syrinx a few fries under the white glass table, since she sure as shit wasn't sharing anything. Exhaustion had set in so thoroughly that neither of them spoke, and once she'd finished slurping down the milkshake, she'd merely gathered up the trash, dumped it into the bin, and headed to her room, leaving Hunt to enter his. A mortal scent lingered that he assumed was courtesy of her parents, and as Hunt opened the drawers, he found some of them full of clothes. Light sweaters, socks, pants, athletic-looking gear. He was snooping. Granted, it was part of the job description, but it was still snooping. He shut the drawers and studied the framed photos. Ember Quinlan had been a knockout. No wonder that fey asshole had pursued her to the point where she'd bailed. Long black hair framed a face that could have been on a billboard. Freckled skin, full lips, and high cheekbones that made the dark, depthless eyes above them striking. It was Bryce's face, the coloring was just different. An equally attractive brown-skinned, dark-haired human male stood beside her, arms slung around her slim shoulders, grinning like a fiend at whoever was behind the camera. Hunt could just barely make out the writing on the silver dog tags dipping over the man's gray button-up. Well, holy shit. Randall Salago was Bryce's adoptive father? The legendary war hero and sharpshooter? He had no idea how he'd missed that fact in her file, though he supposed he had been skimming when he'd read it years ago. No wonder his daughter was so fearless. And there, to the right of Ember, stood Bryce. She was barely past three, that red hair pulled high into two floppy pigtails. Ember was looking at her daughter, the expression a bit exasperated, as if Bryce was supposed to be in the nice clothes that the two adults were wearing. But there she was, giving her mother an equally sassy look, hands on her chubby hips, legs set apart in an unmistakable fighting stance, covered head to toe in mud. Hunt snickered and turned to the other photo on the dresser. It was a beautiful shot of two women. Girls, really, sitting on some red rocks atop a desert mountain, their backs to the camera, shoulder to shoulder as they faced the scrub and sand far below. One was Bryce, he could tell from her sheet of red hair. The other was in a familiar leather jacket, the back painted with those words in the Republic's most ancient language. Through love, all is possible. It had to be Bryce and Danica. And that was Danica's jacket that Bryce now wore. She had no other photos of Danica in the apartment. Through love, all is possible. It was an ancient saying, dating back to some god he couldn't remember. Cathona, probably, what with all the mother goddess stuff she presided over. Hunt had long since stopped visiting temples, or paying much attention to the overzealous priestesses who popped up on the morning talk shows every now and then. None of the five gods had ever helped him, or anyone he cared about. Erd especially had fucked him over often enough. Danica's blonde ponytail draped down Bryce's back as she leaned her head against her friend's shoulder. Bryce wore a loose white t-shirt, showing a bandaged arm braced on her knee. Bruises peppered her body, and gods. That was a sword lying to Danica's left, sheathed and clean, but he knew that sword. Sabine had gone ballistic searching for it when it was discovered to be missing from the apartment where her daughter had been murdered. Apparently it was some wolf heirloom. But there it lay, beside Bryce and Danica in the desert. Sitting there on those rocks, perched over the world, they seemed like two soldiers who had just walked through the darkest halls of hell and were taking a well-earned break. Hunt turned from the picture and rubbed at the tattoo on his brow. A flick of his power had the heavy gray curtains sliding shut over the floor-to-ceiling windows on a chill wind. He peeled off his clothes one by one, and found the bathroom was just as spacious as the bedroom. Hunt showered quickly and fell into bed with his skin still drying. The last thing he saw before sleep overtook him was the photo of Bryce and Danica, frozen forever in a moment of peace. Chapter 28. Hunt woke the moment he scented a male in his room, his fingers wrapping around the knife under his pillow. He opened an eye, grip tightening on the hilt, remembering every window and doorway, every possible would-be weapon that he could wield to his advantage. He found Syrinx sitting on the pillow beside his, the chimera's smooshed-up face peering into his own. Hunt groaned, a breath exploding out of him. Syrinx just swatted at his face. Hunt rolled out of reach.
Good morning to you too,
he mumbled, scanning the room. He definitely shut the door last night. It now gaped wide open. He glanced at the clock. 7. He hadn't noticed Bryce get up for work, hadn't heard her buzzing about the apartment or the music he knew she liked to play. Granted, he hadn't heard his own door open either. He'd slept like the dead. Syrinx rested his head on Hunt's shoulder and huffed a mournful sigh. Solace spare him.
Why do I get the feeling that if I give you breakfast, it'll actually be your second or third meal of the day?
An innocent blink of those round eyes. Unable to help himself, Hunt scratched the little beast behind his silly ears. The sunny apartment beyond his room was silent, the light warming the pale wood floors. He eased from the bed, hauling on his pants. His shirt was a wreck from last night's events, so he left it on the floor, and shit, his phone. He grabbed it from the bedside table and flicked through the messages. Nothing new, no missions from Micah, thank the gods. He left the phone on the dresser beside the door and padded into the great room. No sign or sound. If Quinlan had just left, he stormed across the space to the hall on the other side. Her bedroom door was cracked, as if Syrinx had seen himself out, and sound asleep. The heap of blankets had been twisted and tossed around, and Quinlan lay belly down on the bed, wrapped around a pillow. The position was almost identical to the one she'd been in last night in the club, flung over Juniper. Hunt was pretty sure most people would consider the low-backed gray nightgown, edged with pale pink lace, to be a shirt. Syrinx trotted past, leaping on the bed and nosing her bare shoulder. The tattoo down her back, scrolling beautiful lines in some alphabet he didn't recognize, rose and fell with each deep breath. Bruises he hadn't noted last night peppered her golden skin, already greenish thanks to the fae blood in her. And he was staring at her, like a fucking creep. Hunt twisted for the hall, his wings suddenly too big, his skin too tight, when the front door swung open. A smooth movement had his knife angled behind him. Juniper breezed in, a brown bag of what smelled like chocolate pastries in one hand, a spare set of keys in another. She stopped dead as she spied him in the bedroom hallway. Her mouth popped open in a silent O. She looked him over, not in the way some females did until they noted the tattoos, but in the way that told him she realized a half-naked male stood in Bryce's apartment at 7 in the morning. He opened his mouth to say it wasn't how it looked, but Juniper just strutted past, her delicate hooves clipping on the wood floors. She shoved into the bedroom, jostling the bag, and Syrinx went wild, curly tail wagging as Juniper trilled,
I brought chocolate croissants, so get that bare ass out of bed and into some pans.
Bryce lifted her head to see Juniper, then Hunt in the hall. She didn't bother to tug the hem of her nightgown over her teal lace underwear as she squinted.
What?
Juniper strode to the bed and looked like she was about to plop onto it, but glanced at him. Hunt stiffened.
It's not what it seems.
Juniper gave him a sweet smile.
Then some privacy would be nice.
He backed down the hall, into the kitchen. Coffee, That sounded like a good plan. He opened a cabinet, fishing out some mugs. Their voices flitted out to him anyway.
I tried calling you, but your phone wasn't on. I figured you probably lost it,
Juniper said. Blankets rustled.
Are you all right? Totally fine. News reports are still speculating, but they think human rebels from Pangera did it, wanting to start trouble here. There's video footage from the loading dock that shows their insignia on a case of wine. They think that's how the bomb got in.
So the theory had held overnight. Whether it was truly connected to the horn remained to be seen. Hunt made a note to check with Isaiah about the request to meet with Briggs as soon as Juniper left.
Is the Raven totally wrecked?
A sigh.
Yeah, really bad. No idea when it'll be open again. I finally got a hold of Fury last night, and she said Rizzo's mad enough that he put a bounty on the head of whoever was responsible.
No surprise there. Hunt had heard that despite his laughing nature, when the butterfly shifter got pissed, he went all in. Juniper went on.
Fury's probably coming home because of it. You know she can't resist a challenge.
Burning Solace. Throwing Fury Axtar into this mess was a bad fucking idea. Hunt spooned coffee beans into the gleaming chrome machine built into the kitchen wall. Quinlan asked tightly,
So she'll come back home for a bounty, but not to see us?
A silence. Then,
You weren't the only one who lost Danica that night, B. We all dealt with it in different ways. Fury's answer to her pain was to bail.
Your therapist tell you that?
I'm not fighting with you about this again.
More silence. Juniper cleared her throat.
B, I'm sorry for what I did. You've got a bruise.
It's fine.
No, it's not.
It is. I get it. Hunt turned on the machine's coffee grinder to give them some privacy. He might have ground the beans into a fine powder instead of rough shards, but when he finished, Juniper was saying,
So, the gorgeous angel who's making you coffee right now?
Hunt grinned at the coffee machine. It had been a long, long while since anyone had bothered describing him as anything but Umbra Mortis, the knife of the archangels.
No, no, and no, Bryce cut her off.
Jessica is having me do a classified job, and Hunt was assigned to protect me.
Is being shirtless in your house part of that assignment?
You know how these veneer males are. They live to show off their muscles. Hunt rolled his eyes as Juniper laughed.
I'm shocked you're even letting him stay here, Bea.
I didn't really have a choice.
Hmm.
A thump of bare feet on the ground. You know he's listening, right? His feathers are probably so puffed up he won't be able to fit through the door. Hunt leaned against the counter, the coffee machine doing the growling for him, as Bryce stalked into the hallway.
Puffed up?
She certainly hadn't bothered to fulfill her friend's pants request. Each step had the pale pink lace of the nightgown's hem brushing against her upper thighs, tugging up slightly to reveal that thick, brutal scar on the left leg. His stomach twisted at the sight of what he'd done to her.
Eyes up here, Athalar,
she drawled. Hunt scowled. But Juniper was following closely on Bryce's heels, her hooves clopping lightly on the wood floors as she held up the pastry bag.
I just wanted to drop these off. I've got rehearsal in.
She fished her phone from the pocket of her tight black leggings.
Oh, shit. Now. Bye, Bea.
She rushed to the door, chucking the pastry bag on the table with impressive aim.
Good luck. Call me later, Bryce said, already going to inspect her friend's peace offering.
Juniper lingered in the doorway long enough to say to him,
Do your job, Umbra.
Then she was gone. Bryce slid into one of the white leather chairs at the glass table, and sighed as she pulled out a chocolate croissant. She bit in and moaned.
Do legionaries eat croissants?
He remained leaning against the counter.
Is that an actual question?
Crunch, munch, swallow.
Why are you up so early?
It's nearly 7:30, Hardly early by anyone's count. But your chimera nearly sat on my face, so how could I not be up?
And how many people exactly have keys to this place?
She finished off her croissant.
My parents, Juniper, and the doorman. Speaking of which, I need to give those keys back and get another copy made.
And get me a set.
The second croissant was halfway to her mouth when she set it down.
Not going to happen.
He held her stare.
Yes, it is. And you'll change the enchantments so I can get access.
She bit into the croissant.
Isn't it exhausting to be an alpha hole all the time? Do you guys have a handbook for it? Maybe secret support groups?
An alpha what?
Alpha hole. Possessive and aggressive.
She waved a hand at his bare torso.
You know, you males who rip your shirt off at the slightest provocation, who know how to kill people in 20 different ways, who have females falling over themselves to be with you. And when you finally bang one, you go full-on mating frenzy with her, refusing to let another male look at or talk to her, deciding what and when she needs to eat, what she should wear, when she sees her friends.
What the fuck are you talking about?
Your favorite hobbies are brooding, fighting, and roaring. You've perfected about 30 different types of snarls and growls. You've got a cabal of hot friends, and the moment one of you mates, the others fall like dominoes, too. And gods help you when you all start having babies.
He snatched the croissant out of her hand. That shut her up. Bryce gaped at him, then at the pastry, and Hunt wondered if she'd bite him as he lifted it to his mouth. Damn, but it was good.
One, he told her, yanking over a chair and turning it backward for him to straddle. The last thing I want to do is fuck you, so we can take the whole sex, mating, and baby option off the table. Two, I don't have friends, so there sure as fuck will be no couples retreat lifestyle anytime soon. Three, if we're complaining about people who are clothing optional...
He finished the croissant and gave her a pointed look.
I'm not the one who parades around this apartment in a bra and underwear every morning while getting dressed.
He'd worked hard to forget that particular detail. How after her morning run, she did her hair and makeup in a routine that took her more than an hour from start to finish. Wearing only what seemed to be an extensive and rather spectacular assortment of lingerie.
Hunt supposed if he looked the way she did, he'd wear that shit too.
Bryce only glared at him, his mouth, his hand, and grumbled,
"That was my croissant."
The coffee machine beeped, but he kept his ass planted in the chair.
You're going to get me a new set of keys, and add me to the enchantments, because it's part of my job. And being assertive isn't the first sign of being an alpha hole. It's a sign of me wanting to make sure you don't wind up dead.
Stop cursing so much. You're upsetting Syrinx.
He leaned close enough to note gold flecks in her amber eyes.
You have the dirtiest mouth I've ever heard, sweetheart. And from the way you act, I think you might be the alpha hole here. She hissed. See?
He drawled.
What was it you said? An assortment of snarls and growls?
He waved a hand.
Well, there you go.
She tapped her dusk sky nails on the glass table.
Don't ever eat my croissant again, and stop calling me sweetheart.
Hunt threw her a smirk and rose.
I need to head to the Comitium for my clothes. Where are you going to be?
Bryce scowled and said nothing.
The answer, Hunt went on, is with me. Anywhere you or I go, we go together from now on. Got it?
She flipped him off, but she didn't argue further.
Chapter 29
Mike Adomitus might have been an asshole, but at least he gave his triari the weekend off, or its equivalent if a particular duty required them to work through it. Jessup Oroga, no surprise, didn't seem to believe in weekends. And since Quinlan was expected at work, Hunt had decided they'd hit the barracks at the Comitium during lunch, while most people were distracted. The thick veils of morning mist hadn't burned off by the time Hunt trailed Bryce on her way to work. No new updates had been delivered to him on the bombing,
and there was no mention of further attacks that matched the Crystallos's usual methods. But Hunt still kept his focus sharp, assessing every person who passed the redhead below. Most people spotted Syrinx, prancing at the end of his leash, and gave her a healthy berth. Chimeras were volatile pets, prone to small magics and biting. No matter that Syrinx seemed more interested in whatever food he could swindle out of people. Bryce wore a little black dress today, her makeup more subdued, heavier on the eyes, lighter on the lipstick. Armor, he realized, as she and Syrinx wound through other commuters and tourists, dodging cars already honking with impatience at the usual old square traffic. The clothes, the hair, the makeup. They were like the leather and steel and guns he donned every morning. Except he didn't wear lingerie beneath it. For whatever reason, he found himself dropping onto the cobblestones behind her. She didn't so much as flinch, her sky-high black heels unfaltering. Impressive as hell, for her to walk on the ancient streets without snapping an ankle. Syrinx huffed his greeting and kept trotting, proud as an imperial parade horse. Your boss ever give you a day off? She sipped from the coffee she balanced in her free hand. She drank a surely illegal amount of the stuff throughout the day, starting with no less than 3 cups before they left the apartment.
I get Sundays off, she said.
Palm fronds hissed in the chill breeze above them. The tan skin of her legs pebbled with the cold.
Many of our clients are busy enough that they can't come in during the work week. Saturday is their day of leisure.
Do you get holidays off, at least?
The store is closed on the major ones.
She idly jangled the Trinaut amulet around her neck.
An Arkesian charm like that had to cost.
Burning solace, it had to cost a fuck ton.
Hunt thought about the heavy iron door to the archives. Perhaps it hadn't been put there to keep thieves out, but to keep things in.
He had a feeling she wouldn't tell him any details about why the art required her to wear such an amulet, so he instead asked, "What's the deal with you and your cousin?" who would be arriving at the gallery at some point this morning.
Bryce gently pulled on Syrinx's leash when he lunged for a squirrel scampering up a palm tree. Rune and I were close for a few years when I was a teenager, and then we had a big fight. I stopped speaking to him after that, and things have been... Well, you see how things are now.
What'd you fight about?
The morning mist swirled past as she fell quiet, as if debating what to reveal. She said, "It started off as a fight about his father. What a piece of shit the Autumn King is, and how Rune was wrapped around his finger. It devolved into a screaming match about each other's flaws. I walked out when Rune said that I was flirting with his friends like a shameless hussy and to stay away from them."
Rune had said far worse than that, Hunt recalled. At Luna's temple, he'd heard Bryce refer to him calling her a half-breed slut. "I've always known Dannon was an asshole, but even for him, that's low."
"It was," she admitted softly. "But honestly, I think he was being protective of me. That's what the argument was about, really. He was acting like every other domineering fey asshole out there, and just like my father."
Hunt asked, "You ever have contact with him?"
There were a few dozen fey nobles that might be monstrous enough to have prompted Ember Quinlan to bail all those years ago. "Only when I can't avoid it. I think I hate him more than anyone else in Midgard. Except for Sabine."
She sighed skyward, watching angels and witches zoom past above the buildings around them.
"Who's number one on your shit list?"
Hunt waited until they'd passed a reptilian-looking veneer typing on their phone before he replied, mindful of every camera mounted on the buildings or hidden in trees or garbage cans. "Sandriel."
"Ah."
Only Sandriel's first name was necessary for anyone on Midgard.
"From what I've seen on TV, she seems..."
Bryce grimaced. "Whatever you've seen is the pleasant version. The reality is 10 times worse. She's a sadistic monster."
"To say the least," he added,
I was forced to work for her for more than half a century. Until Micah.
He couldn't say the word. Owned. He'd never let Sandriel have that kind of power over him.
She and the commander of her triari, Pollux, take cruelty and punishment to new levels.
He clenched his jaw, shaking off the blood-soaked memories.
They're not stories to tell on a busy street.
Or at all. But she eyed him. You ever want to talk about it, Athalar? I'm here. She said it casually, but he could read the sincerity in her face. He nodded.
Likewise.
They passed the old square gate, tourists already queued to take photos or touch the disc on the dial pad, gleefully handing over a drop of their power as they did so. None seemed aware of the body that had been found a few blocks away. In the drifting mist, the quartz gate was almost ethereal, like it had been carved from ancient ice. Not one rainbow graced the buildings around it, not in the fog. Syrinx sniffed at a trash can overflowing with food waste from the stands around the square. You ever touch the disc and make a wish? Bryce asked. He shook his head.
I thought it was something only kids and tourists did.
It is, but it's fun. She tossed her hair over a shoulder, smiling to herself. I made a wish here when I was 13, when I visited the city for the first time. Rune took me.
Hunt lifted a brow. What you wish for?
For my boobs to get bigger. A laugh burst out of him, chasing away any lingering shadows that talk of Sandriel dragged up. But Hunt avoided looking at Bryce's chest as he said,
Seems your wish paid off, Quinlan.
Understatement. Big fucking lace-covered understatement. She chuckled. Crescent City, where dreams come true.
Hunt elbowed her ribs, unable to stop himself from making physical contact. She batted him away.
What would you wish for, if you knew it had come true?
For his mother to be alive and safe and happy. For Sandriel and Micah and all the archangels in Asteri to be dead. For his bargain with Micah to be over, and the halo and slave tattoos removed. For the rigid hierarchies of the Malachim to come crashing down. But he couldn't say any of that. Wasn't ready to say those things aloud to her. So Hunt said, Since I'm perfectly happy with the size of my assets, I'd wish for you to stop being such a pain in my ass.
Jerk.
But Bryce grinned. And damn if the morning sun didn't finally make an appearance at the sight of it.
The library beneath Griffin Antiquities would have made even the Autumn King jealous.
Rune Dannon sat at the giant work table in its heart, still needing a moment to take in the space, and the fire sprite who'd batted her eyelashes and asked if all his piercings had hurt. Bryce and Athalar sat on the other side of the table, the former typing at a laptop, the latter leafing through a pile of old tomes. Lahaba lay on what seemed to be a doll's fainting couch, a digital tablet propped up before her, watching one of the more popular Vanir dramas.
So, Bryce said without glancing up from the computer, are you going to look around or sit there and gawk?
Athalar snickered, but said nothing, his finger tracing over a line of text. Rune glared at him. What are you doing? Researching the Crystallos, Hunt said, his dark eyes lifting from the book. I've killed about a dozen Type 6 demons over the centuries, and I want to see if there are any similarities.
Is the Crystallos a Type 6? Rune asked.
I'm assuming it is, Hunt replied, studying the book again. Type 7 is only for the princes themselves, and given what this thing can do, I'd bet it'd be deemed a 6.
He drummed his fingers on the ancient page.
I haven't seen any similarities, though.
Bryce hummed. Maybe you're looking in the wrong spot. Maybe. She angled her laptop toward Athalar, fingers flying. We're looking for info on something that hasn't entered this world in 15,000 years. The fact that no one could ID it suggests it might not have made it into many of the history books, and only a handful of those books survived this long. But
more typing, and Rune craned his neck to see the database she pulled up.
Where are we right now?
She asked Athalar.
Library.
An antiquities gallery, dumbass.
A page loaded, full of images of ancient vases and amphora, mosaics and statues. She'd typed demon plus fey into the search bar. Bryce slid the laptop to Hunt.
Maybe we can find the Crystallos in ancient art.
Hunt grumbled, but Rune noted the impressed gleam in his eyes before he began scanning through the pages of results.
I've never met a prince before.
Lahaba sighed from the couch.
They're overrated,
Rune said over his shoulder. Athalar grunted his agreement.
What is it like?
The sprite asked, propping her fiery head on a burning fist.
To be the chosen one.
Boring, Rune admitted. Beyond the sword and some party tricks, there's not much to it.
Can I see the star sword?
I left it at home. I didn't feel like having to deal with tourists stopping me on every block, wanting to take pictures.
Poor little prince, Bryce cooed. Hunt grunted his agreement again, and Rune bit out.
You got something to say, Athalar?
The angel's eyes lifted from the laptop.
She said it all.
Rune snarled, but Bryce asked, surveying them.
What's the deal with you two? Oh, do tell,
Lahaba pleaded, pausing her show to perk up on the couch. Hunt went back to perusing the results.
We beat the shit out of each other at a party. Dannon's still sore about it.
Bryce's grin was the definition of shit-eating.
Why'd you fight?
Rune snapped.
Because he's an arrogant asshole.
Likewise,
Hunt said, mouth curling in a half smile. Bryce threw Lahaba a knowing look.
Boys and their pissing contests.
Lahaba made a prim little sound.
Not nearly as advanced as us ladies.
Rune rolled his eyes, surprised to find Athalar doing the same. Bryce gestured to the endless shelves that filled the library.
Well, cousin, she said, have at it. Let your starborn powers guide you to enlightenment.
Funny,
he said, but began walking toward the shelves, scanning the titles. He paused at the various tanks and terrariums built into the bookcases, the small animals within wholly uninterested in his presence. He didn't dare ask if the rumors about them were true, especially not when Lahaba called over from her couch.
The tortoise is named Marlene.
Rune gave his sister an alarmed look, but Bryce was doing something on her phone. Music began playing a moment later, trickling in from speakers hidden in the wood panels. Rune listened to the first strains of the song, just a guitar and two soaring, haunting female voices.
You're still into this band?
As a kid, she'd been obsessed with the sister folk duo. Josie and Laurel keep making good music, so I keep listening. She swiped at her phone. Rune continued his idle browsing.
You always had really good taste.
He tossed it out there, a rope into the stormy sea that was their relationship. She didn't look up, but she said a shade quietly.
Thanks.
Athalar, wisely, didn't say a word. Rune scanned the shelves, waiting to feel a tug toward anything beyond the sister who'd spoken more to him in the past few days than she had in 9 years. The titles were in the common language, the old language of the Fae, the Mare, and a few other alphabets he didn't recognize.
This collection is amazing.
Rune reached for a blue tome whose spine glittered with gold foil. Words of the Gods.
Don't touch it, Lahaba warned. It might bite.
Rune snatched back his hand as the book stirred, rumbling on the shelf. His shadows murmured inside him, readying to strike. He willed them to settle.
Why does the book move?
Because they're special,
Lahaba began.
Enough, Lili, Bryce warned. Rune, don't touch anything without permission.
From you or the book?
Both,
she said. As if in answer, a book high up on the shelf rustled. Rune craned his head to look and saw a green tome, shining, beckoning.
His shadows murmured, as if in urging. All right, then. It was a matter of moments to drag over the brass ladder and scale it. Bryce said, seemingly to the library itself,
Don't bother him,
before Rune pulled the book from its resting place. He rolled his eyes at the title. Great Romances of the Fae. Starborn power, indeed. Tucking the book into the crook of his arm, he descended the ladder and returned to the table. Bryce choked on a laugh at the title.
You sure that Starborn power isn't for finding smut?
She called to Lahaba. This one's right up your alley. Lahaba burnt to a raspberry pink.
Bibi, you're horrible.
Athalar winked at him.
Enjoy.
I will, Rune shot back, flipping open the book. His phone buzzed before he could begin. He fished it from his back pocket and glanced at the screen. Dex got the intel you wanted. Bryce and Athalar went still. Rune opened the email, then his fingers hovered over the forwarding screen.
Is your email still the same?
He asked her.
And I don't have yours, Athalar.
Hunt rattled his off, but Bryce frowned at Rune for a long moment, as if weighing whether she wanted to open yet another door into her life. She then sighed and answered,
Yes, it's the same.
Sent, Rune said,
and opened up the attachment Declan had emailed over. It was full of coordinates and their correlating locations. Danica's daily routine as Alpha of the Pack Devils had her moving throughout the old square and beyond, not to mention her healthy social life after sundown. The list covered everything from the apartment, the den, the city head office at the Comitium, a tattoo parlor, a burger joint, too many pizza places to count, bars, a concert venue, the CCU Sunball Arena, hair salons, the gym. Fuck, had she ever gotten any sleep? The list dated back 2 weeks prior to her death. From the silence around the table, he knew Bryce and Hunt were also skimming over the locations. Then, surprise lit Hunt's dark eyes as he looked to her. Bryce murmured, Danica wasn't merely on duty near Luna's temple around that time. This says Danica was stationed at the temple for the 2 days before the horn was stolen, and during the night of the blackout. Hunt asked,
You think she saw whoever took it, and they killed her to cover it up?
Could it be that easy? Rune prayed it was. Bryce shook her head.
If Danica saw the horn being stolen, she would have reported it.
She sighed again.
Danica wasn't usually stationed at the temple, but Sabine often switched her schedule around for spite. Maybe Danica had some of the horn sent on her from being on duty, and the demon tracked her down.
Go through it again, Rune urged. Maybe there's something you're missing.
Bryce's mouth twisted to the side, the portrait of skepticism, but Hunt said,
Better than nothing.
Bryce held the angel stare for longer than most people deemed wise. Nothing good could come of it. Bryce and Athalar working together, living together. But Rune kept his mouth shut and began reading.
Any good sex scenes yet?
Bryce asked Rune idly, going over Danica's location data for the third time. The first few of those locations, she'd realized, had been to Philip Briggs's bomb lab just outside the city walls, including the night of the bust itself. She still remembered Danica and Connor limping into the apartment that night, after making the bust on Briggs and his Kara's group 2 years ago. Danica had been fine, but Connor had sported a split lip and black eye that screamed some shit had gone down. They never told her what, and she hadn't asked. She'd just made Connor sit at that piece of shit kitchen table and let her clean him up. He'd kept his eyes fixed on her face, her mouth, the entire time she'd gently dabbed his lip. She'd known then and there that it was coming, that Connor was done waiting. That 5 years of friendship, of dancing around each other, was now going to change, and he'd make his move soon. It didn't matter that she'd been dating Reed. Connor had let her take care of him, his eyes near glowing, and she'd known it was time.
When Rune didn't immediately respond to her taunting, Bryce looked up from the laptop. Her brother had kept reading and didn't seem to hear her. Rune. Hunt halted his own searching through the gallery database.
Dannon.
Rune snapped his head up, blinking. Bryce asked,
You found something?
Yes and no, Rune said, sitting back in his chair. This is just a 3-page account of Prince Peleus and his bride, Lady Helena. But I didn't realize that Peleus was actually the high general for a fey queen named Thea when they entered this world during the crossing, and Helena was also her daughter. From what it sounds like, Queen Thea was also starborn, and her daughter possessed the same power. Thea had a younger daughter with the same gift, but only Lady Helena gets mentioned. Rune cleared his throat and read, Night-haired Helena, from whose golden skin poured starlight and shadows. It seems like Peleus was one of several fey back then with the starborn power. Bryce blinked.
So? What does it have to do with the horn?
It mentions here that the sacred objects were made only for fey like them, that the horn worked only when that starlight flowed through it, when it was filled with power. This claims that the starborn magic, in addition to a bunch of other crap, can be channeled through the sacred objects, bringing them to life.
I sure as fuck have never been able to do anything like that, even with the star sword.
But it says that's why the Prince of the Pit had to steal Peleus's blood to make the Crystallos to hunt the horn. It contained that essence.
I think the horn could have been wielded by any of them, though.
Hunt said, But if the Prince of the Pit had gotten his hands on the horn, he wouldn't be able to use it unless he had a starborn fey to operate it.
He nodded to Rune.
Even if whoever wants the horn now finds it, they'd have to use you.
Rune considered.
But let's not forget that whoever is summoning the demon to track the horn and kill these people doesn't have the horn. Someone else stole it. So we're essentially looking for two different people, the killer and whoever has the horn.
Well, the horn is broken anyway, Bryce said. Rune tapped the book.
Permanently broken, apparently. It says here that once it was cracked, the Fae claimed it could only be repaired by light that is not light, magic that is not magic. Basically a convoluted way of saying there's no chance in hell of it ever working again.
Hunt said,
So we need to find out why someone would want it then.
He frowned at Rune.
Your father wants it for what? Some Fae PR campaign about the good old days of Faedom?
Rune snorted, and Bryce smiled slightly. With lines like that, Athalar was in danger of becoming one of her favorite people.
Rune said, Basically, yeah. The Fae have been declining, according to him, for the past several thousand years. He claims our ancestors could burn entire forests to ash with half a thought, while he can probably torch a grove and not much more.
Rune's jaw tightened.
It drives him nuts that my chosen one powers are barely more than a kernel.
Bryce knew her own lack of power had been part of her father's disgust with her, proof of the Fae's failing influence. She felt Hunt's eyes on her, as if he could sense the bitterness that rippled through her. She half lied to him. My own father never had a lick of interest in me for the same reason.
Especially after your visit to the Oracle, Rune said.
Hunt's brows rose, but Bryce shook her head at him, scowling. It's a long story. Hunt again looked at her in that considering, all-seeing way.
So Bryce peered over at Rune's tome, skimmed a few lines, and then looked back up at Rune.
This whole section is about your fancy of Allen cousins. Shadow walking, mind reading. I'm surprised they don't claim they're starborn.
They wish they were, Rune muttered. They're a bunch of pricks.
She had a vague memory of Rune telling her the details about why exactly he felt that way, but asked, No mind reading for you?
It's mind speaking, he grumbled, and it has nothing to do with the starborn stuff, or this case.
Hunt apparently seemed to agree, because he cut in,
What if we asked the Oracle about the horn? Maybe she could see why someone would want a broken relic.
Bryce and Rune straightened, but she said,
We'd be better off going to the Mystics.
Hunt cringed.
The Mystics or some dark, fucked up shit? We'll try the Oracle first.
Well, I'm not going,
Bryce said quickly. Hunt's eyes darkened.
Because of what happened at your visit?
Right,
she said tightly. Rune cut in and said to Hunt, You go then. Hunt snickered.
You have a bad experience too, Dannon.
Bryce found herself carefully watching her brother. Rune had never mentioned the Oracle to her, but he just shrugged and said,
Yeah.
Hunt threw up his hands.
Fine, assholes, I'll go. I've never been. It always seemed too gimmicky.
It wasn't. Bryce blocked out the image of the Golden Sphinx, who'd sat before the hole in the floor of her dim black chamber. How that human woman's face had monitored her every breath.
You'll need an appointment,
she managed to say. Silence fell. A buzzing interrupted it, and Hunt sighed as he pulled out his phone.
I gotta take this,
he said, and didn't wait for them to reply before striding up the stairs out of the library. A moment later, the front door to the gallery shut. With Lahaba still watching her show behind them, Rune quietly said to Bryce,
Your power levels never mattered to me, Bryce. You know that, right?
She went back to looking through Danica's data.
Yeah, I know.
She lifted an eyebrow.
What's your deal with the Oracle?
His face shuddered.
Nothing. She told me everything the Autumn King wanted to hear.
What?
You're upset that it wasn't something as disastrous as mine? Rune rose from his seat, piercings glittering in the first lights.
Look, I've got an ox meeting this afternoon that I need to prep for, but I'll see you later.
Sure.
Rune paused, as if debating saying something else, but continued toward the stairs and out.
Your cousin is dreamy,
Lahaba sighed from her couch. I thought Athalar was your one true love, Bryce said.
Can't they both be?
Considering how terrible they are at sharing, I don't think it'll end well for any of you. Her email pinged on the laptop. Since her phone was in shards in the rubble of the Raven, Hunt had emailed,
Saw your cousin leave. We're heading to the Comitium in 5 minutes.
She wrote back,
Don't give me orders, Athalar.
4 minutes, sweetheart.
I told you, don't call me sweetheart.
3 minutes.
Growling, she stood from the table, rubbing her leg. Her heels were already killing her, and knowing Athalar, he'd make her walk the entire Comitium complex. Her dress would look ridiculous with a different set of shoes, but fortunately, she kept a change of clothes in the bottom drawer of the library desk, mostly in case of a rainy day that threatened to ruin whatever she was wearing. Lahaba said,
It's nice to have company down here.
Something in Bryce's chest wrenched, but she said, I'll be back later. Chapter 30 Hunt kept a casual distance from Bryce as she walked beside him through the Comitium lobby to the bank of elevators that would take them up to the 33rd's barracks. The other elevator bays, dispersed through the centralized glass-enclosed atrium, led to the 4 other towers of the complex. One for the city head's meeting rooms and the running of Lunathian, one for Micah as both residence and official office, one for general administrative bullshit, and one for public meetings and events. Thousands upon thousands of people lived and worked within its walls, but even with the bustling lobby, Quinlan somehow managed to stand out. She'd changed into red suede flats and a button-up white blouse tucked into tight jeans, and tied her silken mass of hair into a high ponytail that swayed sassily with every step she took, matching Hunt stride for stride. He placed his palm against the round disc next to the elevator doors, clearing him for access to his floor 30 levels up. Usually, he flew to the barracks landing lobby,
half for ease,
half to avoid the busybodies who were now gawking at them across the lobby floor, no doubt wondering if Hunt was bringing Quinlan here to fuck her or interrogate her. The legionary who lounged on a low-lying couch wasn't particularly skilled in stealing covert glances at her ass. Bryce looked over his shoulder, as if some extra sense told her someone was watching, and gave the soldier a smile. The legionary stiffened. Bryce bit her lower lip, her lashes lowering slightly. Hunt punched the elevator button hard. Even as the male gave Bryce a half-smile, Hunt was pretty sure the bastard threw at any female who came his way. As low-level grunts in a very large machine, legionaries, even those in the famed 33rd, couldn't be picky. The elevator doors opened, and legionaries and business types filed out, those without wings careful not to step on anyone's feathers, and all of them careful not to look Hunt in the eye. It wasn't that he was unfriendly. If someone offered him a smile, he usually made an attempt at returning it. But they'd all heard the stories. All knew whom he worked for, every one of his masters, and what he did for them. They'd be more comfortable getting into an elevator with a starved tiger. So Hunt kept back, minimizing any chance of contact. Bryce whirled to face the elevator, that ponytail nearly whipping him in the face. "Watch that thing," Hunt snapped, as the elevator finally emptied and they walked in. "You'll take my eye out." She leaned nonchalantly against the far glass wall. Mercifully, no one got inside with them. Hunt wasn't stupid enough to think that it was by pure chance. They'd made only one stop on their way here, to buy her a replacement phone for the one she'd lost at the club. She'd even coughed up a few extra marks for a standard protection spell package on the phone. The glass and chrome store had been mostly empty, but he hadn't failed to notice how many would-be shoppers spied him through the windows and kept far away. Bryce hadn't seemed to notice, and while they'd waited for the employee to bring out a new phone for her, she'd asked him for his own so she could trawl the news feeds for any updates on the club attack. Somehow, she'd wound up going through his photos, or lack of them. "There are 36 photos on this phone," she said flatly. Hunt had frowned. "So?" She scrolled through the paltry collection. "Going back 4 years. To when he'd arrived in Lunathian and gotten his first phone and taste of life without a monster ruling over him." Bryce had gagged as she opened a photo of a severed leg on a bloody carpet.
"What the fuck?"
"I sometimes get called to crime scenes and have to snap a few for evidence."
"Are any of these people from your bargain with-
No," he said. "I don't take pictures of them."
"There are 36 photos on your 4-year-old phone, and all of them are of dismembered bodies," she said.
Someone gasped across the store. Hunt gritted his teeth. "Say it a little louder, Quinlan." She frowned.
"You never take any others?"
"Of what?"
"Oh, I don't know, of life? A pretty flower or a good meal or something?"
"What's the point?" She'd blinked, then shook her head.
"Weirdo." And before he could stop her, she'd angled his phone in front of her, beamed from ear to ear, and snapped a photo of herself before she handed it back to him. "There, one non-corpse photo."
Hunt had rolled his eyes, but pocketed the phone. The elevator hummed around them, shooting upward. Bryce watched the numbers rise.
"Do you know who that legionary was?"
she asked casually.
"Which one?" "There was the one drooling on the Traxian carpet, the one with his tongue rolled out on the floor, or the one who was staring at your ass like it was going to talk to him."
She laughed.
"They must keep you all starved for sex in these barracks if the presence of one female sends them into such a tizzy. So, do you have his name? The one who wanted to have a chat with my ass?"
"No. There are 3,000 of us in the 33rd alone."
He glanced at her sidelong, watching her monitor the rising floor numbers.
"Maybe some guy that checks out your ass before he says hello isn't someone worth knowing."
Her brows lifted as the elevator stopped and the doors opened.
That is precisely the kind of person I'm looking for.
She stepped into the simple hallway, and he followed her, realizing as she paused that he knew where they were going and she only faked it. He turned left. Their footsteps echoed off the tan granite tile of the long corridor. The stone was cracked and chipped in spots, from dropped weapons, magical pissing contests, actual brawls, but still polished enough that he could see both their reflections.
Quinlan took in the hall, the names on each door. Males only, or are you mixed?
Mixed, he told her, though there are more males than females in the 33rd.
Do you have a girlfriend? Boyfriend? Someone whose ass you gawk at?
He shook his head, trying to fight the ice in his veins as he stopped before his door, opened it, and let her inside. Trying to block out the image of Shahar plunging to the earth, Sandriel soared through her sternum, both angels' white wings streaming blood. Both sisters screaming, faces nearly mirror images of each other.
I was born a bastard.
He shut the door behind them, watching her survey the small room. The bed was big enough to fit his wings, but there wasn't space for much else beyond an armoire and dresser, a desk stacked with books and papers, and discarded weapons.
So?
So, my mother had no money, and no distinguished bloodline that might have made up for it. I don't exactly have females lining up for me, despite this face of mine.
His laugh was bitter as he opened the cheap pine armoire and pulled out a large duffel.
I had someone once, someone who didn't care about status, but it didn't end well.
Each word singed his tongue. Bryce wrapped her arms around herself, nails digging into the filmy silk of her shirt. She seemed to realize whom he'd alluded to. She glanced around, as if casting for things to say, and somehow settled on,
"When did you make the drop?"
I was 28.
Why then?
My mother had just died.
Sorrow filled her eyes, and he couldn't stand the look, couldn't stand to open up the wound, so he added,
I was reeling afterward, so I got a public anchor and made the drop. But it didn't make a difference. If I'd inherited the power of an archangel or a dormouse, once the tattoos got inked on me 5 years later, it cut me off at the knees.
He could hear her hand stroke his blanket.
You ever regret the Angel's Rebellion?
Hunt glanced over a shoulder to find her leaning against the bed.
No one's ever asked me that.
No one dared, but she held his stare. Hunt admitted,
I don't know what I think.
He let his stare convey the rest, and I wouldn't say a fucking word about it in this place. She nodded, then looked at the walls. No artwork, no posters.
Not one to decorate.
He stuffed clothes into the duffel, remembering she had a washing machine in the apartment.
Micah can trade me whenever he wants. It's asking for bad luck to put down roots like that.
She rubbed her arms, even though the room was warm, almost stuffy.
If he'd died that night, what would have happened to you, to every fallen enslaved he owns?
Our deed of ownership passes on to whoever replaces him.
He hated every word out of his mouth.
If he doesn't have anyone listed, the assets get divided among the other archangels.
Who wouldn't honor his bargain with you?
Definitely not.
Hunt started on the weapons stashed in his desk drawers. He could feel her watching his every movement, as if counting each blade and gun he pulled out. She asked,
If you achieved your freedom, what would you do?
Hunt checked the ammo for the guns he had on his desk, and she wandered over to watch. He tossed a few into his bag. She picked up a long knife as if it were a dirty sock.
I heard your lightning is unique among the angels. Even the archangels can't produce it.
He tucked in his wings.
Yeah.
A shrug.
So why is Isaiah the commander of the 33rd?
He took the knife from her and set it in his bag.
Because I piss off too many people and don't give a shit that I do.
It had been that way even before Mount Hermon,
Yet Shahar had seen it as a strength, made him her general. He'd tried and failed to live up to that honor. Bryce gave him a conspirator's smile.
We have something in common after all, Athalar.
Fine, the angel wasn't so bad. He had patched her up after the bombing with no male swaggering, and he had one hell of a reason to want this case solved, and he pissed Rune off to no end. As he'd finished packing, he'd gotten a call from Isaiah, who said that their request to see Briggs had been approved, but that it would take a few days to get Briggs cleaned up and brought over from Adrestia prison. Bryce had chosen to ignore what exactly that implied about Briggs's current state. The only bright spot was that Isaiah informed Hunt that the Oracle had made room for him on her schedule first thing tomorrow. Bryce eyed Hunt as they boarded the elevator once again, her stomach flipping as they plunged toward the central lobby of the Comitium. Whatever clearance Hunt had, it somehow included overriding the elevator commands to stop at other floors. Sweet. She'd never really known any of the Malachim beyond seeing the legionaries on patrol, or their rich elite strutting like peacocks around town. Most preferred the rooftop lounges in the CBD. And since half-breed sluts weren't allowed into those, she'd never had a chance to take one home. Well, now she was taking one home, though not in the way she'd once imagined while ogling their muscles. She and Danica had once spent two solid summer weeks of lunch breaks sitting on a rooftop adjacent to a Legion training space. With the heat, the male angels had stripped down to their pants while they sparred, and then got sweaty. Very, very sweaty. She and Danica would have kept going every lunch hour if they hadn't been caught by the building's janitor, who called them perverts and permanently locked access to the roof. The elevator slowed to a stop, setting her stomach flipping again. The doors opened, and they were greeted by a wall of impatient-looking legionaries, who all made sure to rearrange their expressions to carefully non-committal when they beheld Hunt. The shadow of death. She'd spied the infamous helmet in his room, sitting beside his desk. He'd left it behind, thank the gods. The Comitium lobby beyond the elevators was packed, full of wings and halos and those enticing muscled bodies, all facing the front doors, craning their necks to see over each other, but none launching into the atrium airspace. Hunt went rigid at the edge of the crowd that had nearly blocked off the barracks elevator bank. Bryce made it all of one step toward him, before the elevator to their right opened and Isaiah rushed out, halting as he spied Hunt. I just heard— The ripple of power at the other end of the lobby made her legs buckle. As if that power had knocked the crowd to the ground, everyone knelt and bowed their heads, leaving the three of them with a perfect view of the archangel who stood at the giant glass doors of the atrium, Micah at her side. Chapter 31 Sandriel turned toward Hunt, Bryce, and Isaiah at the same moment Micah did. Recognition flared in the dark-haired female's eyes as that gaze landed on Hunt, skipped Bryce entirely, and took in Isaiah. Bryce recognized her, of course. She was on television often enough that no one on the planet wouldn't recognize her. A step ahead, Hunt was a trembling live wire. She'd never seen him like this. Get down, Isaiah murmured, and knelt. Hunt didn't move. Wouldn't, Bryce realized. People looked over their shoulders as they remained on their knees. Isaiah muttered,
Pollux isn't with her. Just fucking kneel.
Pollux, the hammer. Some of the tension went out of Hunt, but he remained standing. He looked lost, stranded, somewhere between rage and terror, not even a flicker of lightning at his fingertips. Bryce stepped closer to his side, flicking her ponytail over a shoulder. She took her brand new phone out of her pocket, making sure the sound was cranked up, so everyone could hear the loud click, click, click as she snapped photos of the two archangels, then turned, angling herself in the phone, to get a shot with herself and the governors in the background. People murmured in shock.
Bryce tilted her head to the side, smiling wide, and snapped another. Then she turned to Hunt, who was still trembling, and said as flippantly as she could muster,
"Thanks for bringing me to see them, shall we?"
She didn't give Hunt the chance to do anything as she looped her arm through his, turned them both around before taking a photo with him and the stone-faced archangels and the gawking crowd in the background, and then tugged him back toward the elevator bank. That's why some legionaries had been rushing to get on, to flee. Maybe there was another exit beyond the wall of glass doors. The crowd rose to their feet. She pushed a button, praying it gave her access to any of the tower's floors. Hunt was still shaking. Bryce gripped his arm tight, tapping her foot on the tiles as,
"Explain yourself."
Micah stood behind them, blocking the crowd from the elevator bank. Hunt closed his eyes. Bryce swallowed and turned, nearly whipping Hunt in the face with her hair again.
"Well, I heard that you had a special guest, so I asked Hunt to bring me so I could get a photo."
"Do not lie."
Hunt opened his eyes, then slowly turned to the governor.
"I had to pick up supplies and clothes. Isaiah gave me the go-ahead to bring her here."
As if speaking his name had summoned him, the commander of the 33rd pushed through the line of guards. Isaiah said,
"It's true, Your Grace. Hunt was grabbing necessities and didn't want to risk leaving Miss Quinlan alone while he did it."
The archangel looked at Isaiah, then Hunt, then her. Micah's gaze roved over her body, her face. She knew that gaze, that slow study. Too fucking bad that Micah was about as warm as a fish at the bottom of a mountain lake. Too fucking bad he'd used Hunt like a weapon, dangling his freedom like a dog treat. Too fucking bad he often worked with her father on city matters and on house business. Too bad he reminded her of her father. Boo fucking who. She said to Micah,
"It was nice to see you again, Your Grace."
Then the elevator doors opened, as if some god had willed them to make a good exit. She nudged Hunt inside and was following him in when a cold, strong hand gripped her elbow. She batted her eyelashes up at Micah as he stopped her between the elevator doors. Hunt didn't seem to be breathing, as if he were waiting for the governor to rescind his deal. But Micah purred,
"I would like to take you to dinner, Bryce Quinlan."
She pulled out of his grip, joining Hunt in the elevator, and as the doors closed, she looked the Archangel of Valbara full in the face.
"Not interested," she said.
Hunt had known Sandriel was coming, but running into her today? She must have wanted to surprise them all if Isaiah hadn't known. Wanted to catch the governor and the Legion off guard and see what this place was like before the pomp and circumstance made their defenses seem stronger, their wealth deeper. Before Micah could call in one of his other legions to make them look that much more impressive. What piss-poor fucking luck that they'd run into her. But at least Pollux hadn't been there. Not yet. The elevator shot up again, and Bryce stayed silent, holding herself.
"Not interested."
He doubted Micah Domitus had ever heard those words before.